Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. Go by SEC Mike on the Twitters. And there's our great friend, Stephen Lassen, senior editor over at Athlon Sports. Stephen, how's it going, man?
Mike, less than 20 days until week zero. We've got teams on the field practicing. My brain is trying to process all of these practice reports and what it might mean for the season. But hey, that means college football's right around the corner, right?
That's exactly what it means, Stephen. And you know, no better time if you haven't already. Take advantage of our presenting sponsor all football season long. Head on over to MyBookie, MyBookie.ag. That's the website. And you put in an initial deposit. You put in that promo code SEC. They will 100% match your initial deposit today for all the cousins out there over at MyBookie.ag. And maybe you'll have an edge on who to wager on this football season once we get done talking about all these transfers that Stephen's worked so hard to get for us.
Mike, transfers are like the off-season storyline, aren't they? It's interesting to see when they first hit the portal, that excitement of a team landing a transfer, and then now we're trying to process all this stuff in the fall, trying to figure out where they fit in. Also, as you've pointed out, I think appropriately, careful not to overrate the impact, but man, there are a ton of impactful transfers coming into the SEC this year.
No doubt, and a lot of quarterbacks. So we'll get into all that in just a second, but before we get into the transfers, this is mostly going to be a transfer show because there's so many to talk about. Stephen is ranked the top 25. We've got about 25 more guys who just missed the cut, so we got a lot to talk about. But hey, shout out Benny, member for 10 months. Woo, I love being a cousin. Thank you, Cousin Benny, M-I-Z. Appreciate you, buddy. But I wanted to hit you with this real quick, Stephen. The preseason poll, we don't spend a lot of time talking about the polls because, quite honestly, not a big deal to me. But this is the preseason poll. So, yeah, you know, I think it's kind of noteworthy. Texas, number one in the country. No surprise there. Georgia, 4. Bama, 8. LSU, 9. South Carolina, 13. Ole Miss, 15. Florida, 17. Tennessee, 18. Texas A&M, 21. Those are all the teams that are in the top 25 out of the SEC in the coaches preseason poll. And just outside the cut in the others receiving category, we got Oklahoma at 26, Missouri 27, Auburn 32, Arkansas got a couple votes, number 43, and Vanderbilt 50. So just Kentucky and Mississippi State, those are the only two that are not mentioned in the preseason coaches poll. Anything stand out to you about this poll, Stephen?
Mike, I think the first thing that jumps out to me is I was surprised to see Oklahoma not ranked. I thought, considering what they've been able to do this offseason on the offensive upgrades and what they brought back on defense, there's been kind of a lot of positive growing buzz for this Oklahoma team since the end of last season. I thought they would be ranked. I mean, they're just outside at 26th. I think they should be in the top 25 instead of BYU. Think A&M, Florida, maybe a little bit on the low side. I would tick both of those up a couple spots. Not totally surprising, but I guess, you know, Missouri, I could have easily seen them be a top 25 team. It kind of seems like that's falling in line 26, 27, 30 with most other preseason rankings.
Mm-hmm. But we know you have no issue with Texas, right? Because you've already anointed them. They're national champs. Arch going to win 2 Heisman. So no surprise there. Anybody that, you know, maybe a little bit too high in this poll for you?
I don't think they're too high. I have them at probably about the same thing, like 12, 14, you know, 13, 14, 15. I was curious about South Carolina because I thought some voters would knock them more for the personnel losses around Lenore Sellers. Like, you're replacing the 3 starters in the offensive line, the defensive losses. I thought that voters might have them a little bit lower, but it's good to see maybe they're getting that preseason respect. So I think for the most part, these outside of like the teams that I kind of mentioned, A&M, Oklahoma, Florida, those feel about right. It doesn't feel like anybody's too high from the SEC. Well, maybe Ole Miss. Does that 15th a little too high for you, Mike?
Yeah, too rich for my blood. Yeah. I think that's what that is that's respect for Lane Kiffin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he's averaging what, nine and a half wins per season there at Ole Miss if you discount the COVID year. So again, they're going to win, but at number 15 in the country, it's maybe a little rich for me. But shout out cousin Michael Dunlap, Stephen. He gave us $5. South Carolina will be top five by week seven. So I wanted to throw that your way. That's his bold take of the week. So that clearly they'd have to be undefeated to be there by week seven. What are the odds, Stephen, that you would agree with that? Not to say that you're predicting that, but maybe out of 0% to 100% that South Carolina could be undefeated by week seven.
I think maybe like 50-50. I hope this isn't a boring answer, Mike, but one thing I look at with South Carolina's schedule is they should be, based upon the odds, they should be 5-0 before you get to LSU and Oklahoma. Not overlooking Vanderbilt or Missouri. I'm just kind of playing the odds here from what Vegas is probably going to do. So they should be 5-0 at that point. And you have to also take into account there's going to be some other attrition around them. So it really comes down to the Oklahoma game, who they beat up pretty good last year in Norman, and the road test at LSU. If you go on the road and beat LSU, who's probably a top 10 to 15 team by most people this preseason, and an Oklahoma team that I think should be ranked, that's probably a top, that's 7-0. That is a top five team in the country. So I don't think they're going to get to that point, but I think there's a good chance that they're sitting there at 6-1 at that point, and we're talking about them like inside the top 10.
Yeah. All right, last thing I got on the poll, then we can move on, Stephen, but I just thought this was kind of interesting. I counted all the opponents that every SEC team is going to play this fall and how many teams are featured on the preseason coaches poll for each team. So Florida, Oklahoma, and Mississippi State, they're tied for the most. They face seven of the preseason top 25 in the coaches poll. Arkansas, Kentucky, and LSU, they each face six. Georgia, South Carolina, Texas A&M, and Vanderbilt, they each face five. Alabama, Ole Miss, and Texas each face four. And then Auburn, Missouri, and Tennessee each face three. So if you're an Auburn, Missouri fan, Tennessee, if you're looking for reason for optimism, if for no other reason, you're only facing three of the top 25, that's about as kind as you can get in the SEC.
It really is. And this also kind of mirrors the discussion that we've had all offseason, which is when you look at that Missouri-Auburn kind of duo, favorable schedule, there's some favorable matchups in terms of timing, home games. Like if the quarterback hits, they could be a playoff contender. When you go to the top, it's like Mississippi State's schedule is so hard that just winning a game in SEC play would probably be a good season. And then for Florida and Oklahoma, it raises the point of if they get to 9-3, given that schedule, 10-2 has been the cutoff. But if they go 9-3, can you get to the playoff? And I think they can, given that schedule. Preseason doesn't always equal what happens in the postseason. But I think that illustrates just how challenging these slates are going to be this year. I would be very surprised if both those schedules are just like total bust. These are two of the hardest slates in the country.
Yeah. And then, hey, we got a donation here, Stephen, from cousin Jess Corker. We appreciate you, Jess. Is there any player in the SEC you could see becoming a bona fide coach one day? Is there anyone that stands out to you? And don't you say Arch Manning.
I was trying to figure out like what the next iteration of like our ongoing like off-season joke has been. So I was going to say, I mean, they're probably going to rename the Green Bay Stadium, you know, after him. Like he's going to go win three Super Bowls, replace Vince Lombardi's name. So that would be my first joke. In all seriousness, I would say, I mean, Garrett Nussmeier's dad has been an offensive coordinator. So I could totally see that. Anybody stand out to you? I'm kind of running through my memory banks.
You stole the one right from me. I was going to mention Garrett Nussmeier for that reason, but again, he's probably going to have a lengthy NFL career, so he's got a lot of time to figure that out. I don't know. That's an excellent question, but I think Garrett Nussmeier would top that list for me. Maybe how is it unbelievable that Diego Pavia? I'm just trying to think who's like the least likely. Diego Pavia, rock star. I don't think he's going to be a coach, but it would be kind of hilarious if they like revitalized Last Chance U. And Diego was the coach.
What I mean, you raise a good point here. DeSean Jackson is the head coach at like Norfolk State. Michael Vick is. DeSean Jackson's at Delaware State. So we've kind of had like an interesting. Eddie George is at Bowling Green. We've had like an interesting run of former players be head coaches. So like, what about Diego Pavia going back to New Mexico State to lead them after? It's a hard job, but I think he could be kind of a good little celebrity hire. Ty Simpson also came to mind too. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's kind of waited his turn there at Alabama. I think everyone's been pretty high in his leadership the all off season. That might be a name to watch in the future too. That's a great question though.
Hey, shout out to Justin McCullum. I hope I got that right. Woo Pig says another year with the hopes that we'll probably get stripped away. Another year where 7 wins gets you and Cousin Shane a $50 B-dub card. So, and I hate to say this because it seems so negative, but it almost feels like a 7-5 year for the Razorbacks. That would be a really good year given what they're facing.
Yeah, I think it would too, Mike. I hesitate to say 7-5 is what you should shoot for if you're a fan of an SEC team, because like Arkansas's played for the SEC championship. They've been in high profile bowl games. I think given the playoff era, there are a handful of teams that are going to be annual visitors. Like this is Texas, Alabama, Georgia, but there's also a handful of teams. We saw this last year with SMU. We saw it last year with Indiana. There are those type of teams. Arkansas is a better job than both, where you should be able to make the playoff every X amount of years. So I think given where the roster is and given where the schedule is, getting to 6-6, getting to 7-5 would be a good season. I'm not saying Arkansas fans should just aim for that total, but given the circumstances, that seems like a pretty fair landing spot this year.
Mm-hmm. All right, shout out. Hey, real quick before we move on to the transfers, Gunner Ward, we appreciate you, buddy. He just gifted a membership. Steven, just had it here. Kevin Harper. Kevin, welcome to the family.
Welcome to the family.
Thanks to Cousin Gunner. We appreciate you, buddy. So, all right, Steven, top transfers. Steven and I were talking about this off air, how to do it. You can count down. We can mention some guys that just missed the cut, but we said, why? Let's just do it a little different. Let's cut to the chase. We're going to go with Steven's number one transfer in the SEC. And this year we'll go from 1 to 25, but maybe right before you unveil it, Steven, preview or insight into how you did this list?
It's a good question, because I think there's a couple different ways you can do it. You could just do by raw talent. I tried to weigh like impact, starting role, how big of a presence are they going to have on this team this year? It's tricky because there are some teams that brought in like 2 receivers. Both those guys could make the list. You could also look at like an impact of a defensive lineman playing 20 snaps, but is ultra talented. Trying to weigh all those things. I gave quarterbacks also a bump. Because they play the most important position on the field. So I will say, Mike, I do think compared to previous years, I don't know that this is as deep of a transfer class as we've seen coming into the SEC. It does feel like maybe it's a step down from even last season.
Mm-hmm. All right. So number one, I guess you can't count Arch, right? So if you remove an Arch, who's not a transfer, but he still was number one on your list somehow. Who is the number one best transfer you think this season in the SEC?
Mike, it was an easy call for me. It's John Mateer. I think just in terms of importance, he might be one of the biggest mystery players and the most important player to a lot of things in college football this year, just because of what he means to Oklahoma. Trying to turn around this offense with the OC and the quarterback coming from Washington State. Everything that happened last year with all the injuries, the supporting cast is better. They are in a much better spot. They have continuity at quarterback now with Mateer. The question is going to be, how does he perform against SEC defenses? Putting that aside, it is just an upgrade in terms of direction, kind of overall continuity for this offense. So Mateer, importance, talent, ability, he's our number one transfer for this year.
How much did you factor in the that they it'll be the similar offense for them. They brought obviously the offensive coordinator, quarterback, coach. We have seen that work with Diego Pavia. We've seen it work with other quarterback coordinator duos across the country. How big of an assist do you think that'll be for John Mateer to kind of hit the ground running?
I think it's huge. You know, I think we've seen there's been some kind of, like you mentioned, Pavia. There's also been some others too, like at the G5, you go get the coordinator and the quarterback. And trying to learn a system in one off season, it's doable. But I think you're basically just taking that offense, you're taking a play caller, and you're just dropping them from Pullman to Norman and saying, you've already hit at 60 miles an hour last year, pick up where you left off and go 80 this year. And so I think had he gone back to Washington State, you could expect this offense to take a step forward because of that familiarity, second year as a starter. You can also look at this too, is he's got to play SEC defenses. SEC defenses are also going to have to account for him. And he's also playing with a really talented supporting cast, albeit with some questions given the kind of transition. But I think that OC quarterback familiarity is super, super important and also definitely played into putting him at one.
Mm-hmm. Hey, shout out real quick. Beard just became a member to the channel. Welcome to the family. We appreciate you, Beard. And thank you, Stephen, for the assist. All right, number two.
I didn't know if I was allowed to chime in on those. I thought,
of course. Okay, you're part of the family. Right. Who's your number two transfer in the SEC this season, Stephen?
Let's go with Eric Singleton, the wide receiver from Auburn, coming over from Georgia Tech. Just kind of imagining that Friday night game with Baylor, Cam Coleman, Eric Singleton taking on kind of a shaky Baylor secondary is going to be a fun way to start the season. But Singleton had over 700 yards in back-to-back seasons at Georgia Tech. They did have some inconsistent quarterback play because Haynes King got hurt, but Singleton was still very productive. When I went back and looked at his snap counts at Georgia Tech, pretty much played out of the slot, but he also kind of split out wide too. So you're looking at a receiver who can give you something in two different areas, the versatility outside and also in the slot too. So another reason why Auburn has one of the best receiving corps in the country, and that's Eric Singleton's arrival.
Yeah. Did you factor in at all? Again, we're probably not trying to discount Jackson Arnold, which I would imagine he's on this list as well. But the fact that, quarterback has been an issue for Auburn the last couple of years, maybe that's not fair to Jackson Arnold, but certainly is fair to the coaching staff that maybe you could have all the talent in the world at receiver, but if you don't have the right quarterback, if you don't have the right offensive line, maybe you can't get that guy the ball. Did that weigh on you at all?
It did. I think this is a case of talent almost overcoming those questions. I think really highly of Eric Singleton. I think if he was at Georgia Tech this year, I think there's a chance he is first team all ACC and potentially on the All-America team because he has a more of a clear path to catches and yards. Like at Auburn, he's competing with Cam Coleman. It's a little bit easier at Georgia Tech. So I think that all factors into it. Maybe the next guy on our list, you could make a pretty strong case that he should be too, given the clear path to playing time. But I think very highly of Singleton's talent, and that's why he gets the nod at two.
Okay. Well, you know who gets the nod at number one, Stephen?
Legend, cousin JR has done it again.
JR, shout out JR. Just gifted a membership. Thank you, JR. This time it's Jay Qualls. Jay, welcome to the family.
The family.
Yeah, we appreciate you. Thanks to JR.
The memberships in this podcast are brought to you in part by Cousin JR.
All right, number three on your list, Steven. Oh, man, this is going to be a popular one. I can already tell you.
I think he could have been number two because he has a clear and direct path to play in time. But that is Ahmad Hardy, the running back from Missouri, transferring in from Louisiana Monroe. Obviously, there's a question of Sun Belt defenses versus the SEC. Plus, you throw in some Missouri offensive line uncertainty. But no denying that he was one of the best freshmen in college football last year, over 1,000 yards. Mike, check out the stat. He ran for 1,351 yards, 1,000 basically just over 1,000 yards came after contact. So there was a lot of times that he was getting contact and continuing to go. So I think that's a good sign. Like if you're Missouri, like you're getting a running back who has a track record of breaking some tackles, being able to keep his legs moving. So I like the opportunity. I like the talent. We'll see about the step up in competition. But in terms of need fit, Ahmad Hardy should be one of the SEC's best running backs this year.
Yeah, so I'm really glad to hear you say this, Stephen, because I can't remember how long ago this was, but a couple weeks ago, a couple months ago, what have you, I predicted he would, one of my bold takes was he'll lead the SEC in rushing. Now, I'm not asking you to be bold with me, but just based on your rankings of Ahmad Hardy, number 3 overall transfer in the SEC, that's not a crazy take, would you say?
I like it. I actually would agree with you. I think if you want to zoom out and look at running backs as a whole, I mean, who's going to have like the lion's share of carries across the SEC? I mean, like I like guys like Trey Wisner, Jaden Ott, Jaden Baugh, Nate Frazier. I mean, all of those guys are going to be good, but couldn't they all share carries? Like Hardy has a clear path to the number one job. And, you know, maybe if you're making a preseason prop bet, that's maybe a good one to take. Hardy to lead the SEC in rushing.
No doubt. Also, I got two favorite Stevens. You're one of them, of course. The other one.
Always showing up for them boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Steven Up. Roll Tide.
Thank you, Steven Up. He gifted a membership to Mountain Drew. What a name, Mountain. Welcome to
the family.
Yeah, all right, we're getting
catching on. Almost as good as Eric Singleton's catcher.
Thank you so much, Stephen Up. We really appreciate you. All right, number 4, transfer in the SEC. Stephen, who you got?
Speaking of receivers, Kevin Concepcion. I love the versatility that he brings to this Texas A&M offense. He can play on special teams. He can kind of run the ball, whether it's a reverse, out of the slot, on a handoff, however you want to get it to him. I think it gets at the idea of A&M needing somebody who can take a short catch and turn it into a longer gain. And I think Concepcion is a much-needed playmaker for Texas A&M's receiving core. 71 catches as a freshman at NC State. His numbers dipped a little bit last year. I'm not too worried. NC State had a lot of turnover there. So give me Kevin Concepcion at number 4.
Now, I'm not saying he's a bad player. We've been hyping him up on this show by any means, so don't get it confused. But his lofty ranking, it's a very high ranking. Is that in part because A&M, I know they bring back Terry Bussey, who I think was 4th or 5th in receiving yards last year on A&M's roster. But is part of his ranking the fact that all the other guys are gone and now there's this huge void of targets, you know, for A&M to give Concepcion?
100%. It's kind of two things. It's number one, it's the opportunity side of this. Like Ahmad Hardy, you have a clear path to playing time. There's a clear path to playing time at receiver. But also think it's the what he brings to the table as a receiver for Texas A&M. And knowing last year like that they needed more dudes and playmakers out there, that he fits that. So it's opportunity, need, and fit, I think, for this Texas A&M offense.
Okay. Number 5, Steven. Oh, man. I think they're going to like this one.
Speaking of another receiver, Kevin Coleman of Missouri coming over from Mississippi State. We talk about opportunity, path to playing time, losing Luther Burden, losing Theo Weiss. Missouri's losing both those guys, but you are getting an SEC proven option. We saw this last season at Mississippi State, 4 100 yard efforts, including one against Georgia with Michael Van Buren starting. Also, he plays in the slot, which basically kind of goes one for one for Luther Burden. Maybe they could mix and match him around a little bit. Also, I think it's vital with Prabula coming in at quarterback, we think, that you have somebody who's a proven number one receiver, given all of the turnover that you have with Burden and Weiss gone.
Right. And again, there's going to be, I don't want to tease or give away the list, but there's going to be a lot more Missouri. But when you see all these it really hits home for people that have not been paying attention. I know all the Missouri fans, they've been, you know, harping on this transfer class all off season, but starting to get an indication on just how many good players that Eli Drinkwitz's company program landed this offseason.
On both sides of the ball, too, to your point. And I was thinking about this earlier, too. It does feel like Drinkwitz and that staff, they do a really good job at identifying guys in the portal. Some are obvious, like Hardy was really good. But they do a good job of identifying guys and then also doing what they need to do to maximize their talent, essentially. You know, part of college football is being able to identify the good players, but also to put them in the schemes that make the most out of their talent. And I think they've done a good job of mining the portal. It's hard. It's dangerous to go portal heavy, but it feels like they're doing it the right way there.
Mm-hmm. All right. Number six, how much confidence do you have in this pick?
Not a ton. he was one of the hardest players to rank, and that is Jackson Arnold, the quarterback at Auburn. If there is a puzzle piece to figure out what's going to happen in the SEC this year, Mateer is one, Arnold is two. Just how good is Jackson Arnold is kind of a question that I've been thinking about since last January or December when he transferred from Oklahoma to Auburn. I don't think there's any question about the individual skills and talent. We saw it when he played in the Alamo Bowl for Oklahoma. There's a lot to work with. There were some turnovers. There was a lot of problems around him last year at Oklahoma. But I think this ranking at six is kind of an indicator of he's talented. There are some questions, but there's also an opportunity and also the importance of Jackson Arnold because everything seems to ride for Auburn on how good they can be, just on how good Jackson Arnold is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, we kind of have just talked in circles since this moment happened, but I think he's the biggest X factor perhaps in the conference, and can't wait to see what he looks like with actual weapons on the outside, with potentially, fingers crossed for his sake, an offensive line that can hold up, because he had neither at Oklahoma. And I don't care if they had Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, or Jaden Daniels. You know, I don't know how you can evaluate a quarterback that has no receivers and no offensive line. I don't think you honestly can rate a player like that.
I totally agree. I think that's what makes him a tough evaluation is when everything is going wrong around you, it's hard to overcome all those things. If you're a quarterback, you know, it's tough to, like, you can evaluate some of the throws and the arm talent and things like that. But Auburn's got one of the best receiving cores in the country. They've got one of the best offensive lines in the SEC. They've got good running backs. I know there's not a proven guy, but I feel pretty good about those. It seems like the supporting cast is way better. Like, if you ranked last year, Oklahoma was at the bottom. Auburn is closer to the top and all of those. So I think just given talent, system, pieces around him, I think it's reasonable to expect a bounce back. I think the question is, how high is that bounce back? And to go along with that, taking better care of the ball is a must, because he lost 10 fumbles last year, threw some interceptions. So clean some of that up, and I think he could be a little bit higher on this list come December.
Mm-hmm. All right. Number seven, Steven, I think this will be a popular one.
Back to Missouri, Damon Wilson checking in at number seven, the defensive end. You know, to go along with our discussion on Missouri's usage of the portal, you know, I thought about, like, Zion Young, Chris McClellan. They've got a very talented front, and Missouri has done a good job, like I said, of maximizing that. Now here's Damon Wilson, Darius Smith also coming back from injury. They've got some dudes who could potentially get after the quarterback here. If you look at Wilson's snaps at Georgia, he played about 500, limited impact. Obviously, Jalen Walker, Michael Williams played a large part of that. So I think this is a kind of a bank on talent, ultra talented coming out of high school. He's been behind some other players. Now he's got a path to more playing time at Missouri.
Well, the Mizzou fans are... I can't believe you're giving them this much credit, Steven. But again, I couldn't believe it myself when I saw this list. And I said, man, Mizzou. A lot of Mizzou and more to come.
Man, I didn't know Missouri fans thought I was, like, anti-Missouri here. I've always been, you know. I think every article I've written is, like, underrated program.
Oh yeah. Well, if you're not picking them to go 10-2 every year like Shane, you hate them. That's what I've learned. Number 8 transfer, Steven.
Jaden Ott of Oklahoma. I think the Mateer Jaden Ott backfield at Oklahoma is the chaos backfield of college football for 2025, because this could be fun, it could be entertaining, and it could be incredibly dynamic. If you look at Jaden Ott's career at California, 2023, one of the best running backs in the country. Versatile, could catch the ball, play on special teams, over 1,000 yards rushing. He was hurt all of last year. And so I almost think you just forget about his numbers from last year. The offensive line at California wasn't very good. So you're getting a better player than the numbers showed here. Oklahoma's backfield's pretty deep, but I think Ott's probably the best of the bunch, and his all-around versatility could be a real asset for Mateer.
Yeah, and I don't know if you caught this yet, Steven. I don't even recall when it was said. I think maybe this weekend, but Jaden Ott said they may be using him as a receiver as well out of the slot this season. So it goes to exactly what you just said, the versatility that he'll provide for this Oklahoma offense. That's going to be something to watch all off season long. And that's another thing. I harped on Oklahoma receivers and offensive line. They had some decent backs, but they didn't really have a game breaker. So I'll be interested to see if Ott can be that, because I think they desperately need it, Norman.
I think maybe the simplest way to sum it up is it feels like he's a playmaker. And it gets at like the idea of you could get him on a little screen pass and it goes for a 50-yard touchdown. And given all of the injuries last season and even this preseason, given the fact that some of their receivers are banged up, you can find ways to get him the ball and maximize his talent. So Hardy, we talk about transfer running backs. Hardy has a much clearer path to like 1,000 yards. Ott feels like if he gets to 1,000 all-purpose yards, that's probably a good season. He can be used in a lot of different ways for Ben Arbuckle.
Mm-hmm. All right. Number 9 on the list, Steven.
Xavier Chaplin, the offensive tackle from Virginia Tech, transferring into Auburn. When we talk about the portal, I think one of the most interesting angles is linemen and seeing how they transition from one school to the next. I think it's a rather steep climb for G5 to the SEC, but Chaplin has been a starter for the last 2 years over at Virginia Tech. And according to Pro Football Focus, gave up just 2 sacks last season. Pretty good as a run blocker, pretty good as a pass blocker, honorable mention, all ACC honor. So really solid lineman that Auburn is bringing in from Virginia Tech, and also continuing to solidify that supporting cast around Jackson Arnold.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I believe Auburn's, you know, kind of shuffling guys around on the offensive line thanks to bringing in Chaplin. So they really need a left tackle to emerge. And if he's that guy, Jackson Arnold, you know, that's going to be his new best friend. You know what?
Yeah, yeah. Also, Mason Murphy coming in from USC might end up starting on the right side. Kind of, again, you know, talking about Auburn's offensive line potentially being one of the best in the SEC. It's because they're getting two SEC ready tackles from the portal. It's hard, I think, to get 3 or 4 starters from the portal, but if you can get a solid left tackle, I think that's a win for Hugh Freeze and the staff.
Mm-hmm. Now, the number 10 guy on Steven's list, I heard Coach Brian Kelly shout this guy out today. Who you got number 10?
Mansoor Delaney, the cornerback, also from Virginia Tech, transferring to the SEC, this time for LSU. I think you look at Delaney and you look at AJ Halsey, the Houston transfer from at safety, everything is in place to be a much improved secondary for LSU this year. Delaney is an experienced corner, over 2,000 snaps almost 2,000 snaps at Virginia Tech. These advanced numbers have been pretty solid. He was third team all ACC last year. Also gives you some good size. Like, he checks in at about 6 foot tall, which is pretty solid for a corner out there. So I think Delaney has a chance to be kind of like maybe a fringe all SEC guy this year at corner. And it also, you think about bringing him in, it pushes other guys down the depth chart at LSU, which I think helps their defense get better this year.
Yeah, and so Brian Kelly was talking him up today, and just the experience, that he has seen in college football. I believe he called that, you know, invaluable at the cornerback position. So I don't think they've, you know, anointed any starters by any means. I don't think you do that this early in camp, but would be pretty stunning to me if he's not a starting cornerback for LSU this fall.
Agree. And also he maybe eases the transition to DJ Pickett too. So you don't have to put like a true freshman out there week one, week two of the season. You can allow him to kind of ease his way into the lineup.
Mm-hmm. Now there may be no easing for number 11. Who you got here, Steven?
Another mystery player. That is Bo Prabula at Missouri. I think he is one of the biggest X factors in the country this season. A ton of intrigue for how he adapts from being a part-time player at Penn State to being a full-time player at Missouri. Love the rushing, over 500 yards rushing at Missouri. Pretty good numbers as a passer in limited time. That's limited time, often against backups. He did have a little stint against Wisconsin last year when Drew Aller was injured, but there's still just a ton of mystery. And just how good Prabula is probably shapes Missouri's season this year.
Yeah. So again, this is got to be maybe the number one right now that you're kind of projecting, right? What he can do, just like you said, because there's so much unknowns there. I mean, he could be instrumental in a playoff run. He could be instrumental in Missouri missing a bowl game. You know what I mean? Like if he's awful, I mean, they got other options, but the variance there is just completely wide open, I think, for old Bo.
It also, if you think about just the storyline coming into the season, like if you're Eli Drinkwitz or Kirby Moore, you think you have your starting quarterback, you know, and if he doesn't work out, you're going to have to go to Sam Horn or Zollers. And so you're already talking about we may have missed on a quarterback. And what does that mean for the kind of the effect it could have the rest of the season? I also think, you know, getting Central Arkansas, Kansas, and Louisiana to start the season gives him a nice runway until you get to that game against South Carolina.
Yeah, what do we all like? Three cupcakes to open the season. You know what?
I like three cupcakes on a day, right?
Yeah. Of course, that killed Ole Miss last year. And then they finally got into a conference game and they couldn't handle it.
That game against Kansas will be interesting. Mm-hmm. But Kansas defense is rebuilt and it's at home. That's like the perfect start if you're going to break in a new quarterback. Three games at home, FCS, one G5, and a defense in Kansas that's rebuilding.
Yeah. Well, you know, who also likes cupcakes, Steven?
Well, apparently Horton couldn't hear you, so he's gifting you a membership.
Appreciate you, Horton. Horton just gifted a membership, Steven, to Scott Fitz. Scott, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, we appreciate you. Thank you, Horton hears you. Let's see.
Welcome to the family.
All right, number 12. Oh, here you go. Here's another one of them Tigers, Steven.
We're going to go with Braylon Moore, the offensive lineman, also transferring in from Virginia Tech to LSU. Kind of wondering why Virginia Tech went 6-7 last year, right? So Braylon Moore, I think, need and also fit. So he basically played over 1,500 snaps at Virginia Tech, 2-year starter, plug and play at center. And it looks like based upon what Brian Kelly was saying, I think today, that he looks like he is going to end up being the starting center, but he's got experience, kind of a veteran hand to ease that transition for Garrett Nussmeier. And especially when you go play Clemson in the season opener on the road, to have somebody who's kind of been through the battles, even if they're new, I think it's a big asset for LSU.
How big of a concern is that offensive line for you though, to having to open the season at Clemson, which, I don't follow Clemson that closely, but I know you're well aware of their roster, that I hear they got a bunch of defensive linemen that project to be high NFL picks, perhaps.
Yeah, I think Clemson top five defensive line for sure. They could end up being the best defensive line in the country by the end of the year. Two names to watch. So Peter Woods, who's played end and tackle, I think he's going to kick into tackle this year. I bring that up because if you look at Clemson's defensive stats, they really struggled to stop the run last year. Not the best recipe for LSU because, you know, we've had some issues off and on with the run game. But they've got TJ Parker as well coming off the edge. So I think that kind of gets at the challenge here for LSU is on the road, hostile environment, good defensive line, and a new defensive coordinator for Clemson. So there's a lot of new, a little bit of mystery, a lot of talent in a revamped LSU offensive line. It is a real concern to me how LSU's defense or offensive line comes together given the new faces in that opener at Clemson.
Mm-hmm. Well, Steven said defense. He's looking ahead to number 13. Who's the number 13 transfer on your list?
Patrick Payton from LSU coming over from Florida State. Very interested to see how this works. So if you go back to 2023, Patrick Payton was probably one of the best defensive linemen in the country. Certainly made all preseason All-America teams last year. Didn't quite live up to the hype. Couple things could be going on there. Number one, Jared Verse went to the NFL. He was the other opposite end at Florida State. Also, Florida State's coaching staff overall play left a lot to be desired. So a fresh start with maybe a better defensive coaching staff, maybe he's used better, I think will make an impact here. 2 years ago, Patrick Payton had 14 and a half tackles for loss and 7 sacks. LSU needs that kind of production from him this year.
Man, LSU also needs to open with Florida State this year instead of the years they did. You know what?
Yeah, that they need Florida State instead of Clemson this year. Can we trade Alabama and Florida State's schedules and make this happen?
Yeah. All right, number 14. I don't think we've had a Longhorn till now.
The first Longhorn on the list, Mike, it's Jack Andres, the tight end from California coming over from to Texas. Caught over 50 passes last year on California's offense. And here he comes into a much better offense at Texas. He's already established as one of the top pass catching tight ends in college football, fills a massive need with Gunnar Helm off to the NFL. So throw in Wingo, DeAndre Moore, Andres, and Emmett Mosley. And that is why Texas has one of the best receiving corps in the country.
All right, be honest, Steven. So you got this tight end 14th. Does he get the Arch bump or anything? Like he was 24, but now he gets to play with Arch. You know he's going to be 10 better.
I had him on my All-America team even before he transferred to Texas. So okay. I think he's a good player. To your point, I think his production ticked up a little bit in this offense as opposed to going to Cal and playing for old SEC friend Brian Harsin.
Smart on him to get the hell right. out of there, you know?
Yeah. Cal's offense didn't draw rave reviews in the spring, and there was a mass exodus of players. Wonder why.
I wonder why. Well, hey, shout out. Speaking of, the opposite of old Brian Harsin is our buddy, Cousin Carl Junkins. He just gifted a membership, Steven, to Shane Bentley. Shane, welcome to
the family.
Yeah. Thank you, Carl. We appreciate you for being so generous here, even though Steven has not rated a Tennessee Vol. I don't know what's up with that, but we'll get to some here.
They're coming.
Number 15, Steven. And Steven, here's where he gets to cheat a little.
I did cheat here. I basically wanted to send Mike pick any Texas defensive lineman who is going to start at defensive tackle this year. So that could be Cole Brevard. It could be Travis Shaw. It could be Marad Watson. LaVon Johnson, Hero Canoe. 5 transfer defensive tackles coming to Austin this year. It's a place where they are losing a lot from last year. I expect all of these guys to play a lot and make an impact. Brevard has been a run stuffer. He's over 330 pounds. Travis Shaw has been a little bit banged up, but when he's healthy, he's been solid. And Watson from Syracuse might be the one that's got the most upside. And he just came off a good freshman season at Syracuse. Probably a player to watch this year and certainly even in 2026.
So the rich just get richer. Is that what you're telling me there, Steven?
Texas did. Yeah. If this is a spot that, you know, leaving like the end of the season was kind of like you lose, you know, Alfred Collins and all those guys, but you just pluck 5 pretty solid linemen from the portal, you end up being a pretty good spot.
Well, can you tell, and we don't have to do, you know, we got plenty of time to break down like previews and stuff like that, but since you kind of already did this a little bit with LSU, offensive line, Clemson defensive line. How does can you just provide any insight on Ohio State offensive line going up against these Texas defensive linemen? I'm just kind of curious if there's a major advantage there, if there's a no advantage there. What's your thoughts on that?
It's funny that you asked me this, because I think one of the storylines about this game is going to be Arch Manning, Julian Sayin, the two quarterbacks. But what's interesting is Ohio State's offensive line is pretty solid, top 15 in the country. All the new faces on Texas, the offensive line looks like they may have just lost one of their co-starters at right tackle for the year. And Ohio State's defensive line is a question. So you kind of have strength on strength and kind of question mark on question mark. So I actually think if I'm Ohio State, I might try to run the ball and see how these Texas defensive tackles hold up in their first game. So I think that the trenches are going to be very interesting in that first game.
Okay. Well, hey, I know who appreciates that breakdown is Cousin Beard. He just became a member. Mike, I really enjoy when you show up on own Texas football. Finally, join the family. Hook 'em. Appreciate you, Beard. And old, Bobby asked me on his show all the time. So I'm always available. I'm a big fan of Bobby Burton. And shout out Cousin Rick, $20. What a guy. I'm going to play his jingle because he's so generous to us.
It's Texas A&M's biggest fan, Cousin Rick. Gig'em Aggies.
Thank you, Rick. New Aggie receivers will rock this list by the end of the season. Go Concepcion. I see what he did there. I appreciate you, Rick. Yes, we need more Aggies on this list is what we need, Stephen. But let's see. Are we going to get any more? I've already looked ahead. We may not. But there's plenty in the mentioned. Who's number 16 on your list here, Stephen? Once again, is Stephen cheating a little bit here?
I'm cheating again, Mike, for these next couple. Basically, pick whichever LSU receiver that you like more here, Nick Anderson or Barry and Brown. I think both of these guys can make an impact. I mean, certainly Barry and Brown, day one, kick returner, specialist, can make an impact. Nick Anderson was so good at Oklahoma 2 years ago with the 10 touchdown catches. He's been banged up since then. He's been banged up already this year. Does it take him some time to get into the rhythm of the season? Either way, just thinking about how this receiving core could shape up. You've got Aaron Anderson, who's also banged up. Chris Hilton, who's had some injuries. So getting Nick Anderson and Barry and Brown gives you depth. It gives you some speed. It gives you playmaking ability. And speaking of openers, that Clemson game, I think if LSU can protect Nussmeier, I think one of the concerns about Clemson has been depth in the secondary. So if I'm LSU, I want to test your three and your four corners. Are they as good as these receivers? That's going to be something I'm watching in the opener.
Is it fair, though, at all to question these two, Nick Anderson, Barry and Brown specifically, because of their past situations? Now, Nick Anderson, it was injury, so I don't really blame him for that, but now we're seeing him be banged up at LSU a little bit, and he's not even played. And Barry and Brown, you know, he's got all-world speed. He will probably leave the SEC as perhaps the best kick returner in conference history, but he's got a lot of problem with drops. And I don't care how bad Kentucky's quarterbacks are. We can't blame the quarterback on receiver dropping the ball, I don't think. So, I'm not calling these guys out because they could be superstars, particularly Barron Brown, I think, and really even Nick Anderson if he's healthy. But there's reason to believe in these guys, but I also think it's fair to say there's reason to doubt these guys. Would you agree with anything that I just said?
Yes, I would. And I think putting them at 16 on this list is kind of an acknowledgement of talent plus opportunity. It's sometimes we kind of have to remove the player from the system and we have to remove them from the supporting stuff and say, if you drop them into this, they can produce like this. And I'm kind of thinking these two guys are really talented. And especially for Barry and Brown, to your point, the drops and mistakes, this is kind of a payday kind of year. Like if you want to go to the NFL and, you know, be drafted and play a long time and get that big contract, you're going to an offense where you're catching passes probably from a first or second round quarterback, you better deliver. And so I just think about opportunity, think about talent, and I think that translates well here for LSU, but also acknowledging to your point, there are some major concerns here.
Well, and we're also concerned, Stephen, because you haven't had a Vol on here yet. Shout out Cousin Carl Juggins, $20, bribe for Steven to act like he likes some Vol transfers. We got a couple coming up. I don't want to spoil the list here.
Vols.
But we'll have a couple in just a second. All right, number 17, Steven.
Another cheat here on the exam. We're going with another duo of receivers, Zachariah Branch and Noah Thomas from Georgia. Kind of the same thing as LSU. You're taking two talented receivers and dropping them into a situation where Georgia had a ton of drops, inconsistent play. There's a hope that these two can give you much more consistency. Branch working out of the slot. I think Noah Thomas, Colby Young, the size, the maybe they play the same position, however it works out for Georgia. I think the question that I have with Georgia with Branch is, can you get the most out of his talent? 2 years ago, he looked like one of the most electric playmakers in college football, but his like yards per catch average is around 10. He didn't really have a great year last year at USC. That might be the coach at USC's fault. I won't mention his name for Oklahoma fans. But I think there's a lot to like here. Size for Thomas and also proven SEC production and the ability to play slot and special teams for Branch.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, again, fair or not, I think Branch is a little bit more hype than he is a quality player. We've seen that for 2 years now. If he's at Tennessee, I would never dare say that. But I think Noah Thomas really started to come on. I fought Steven to get him on the list. I think Noah Thomas could be a breakout star. You know, if he can continue the last season's momentum that he had at College Station, if he can carry that over to Athens, we'll have to see about the quarterback situation and if that's a strength for Georgia or not. But Noah Thomas, I'm more confident in Noah Thomas having a good year than I am Branch, but that doesn't mean Branch is a bad player by any means. I give preference to players that have done it in this conference, if that makes sense.
Makes total sense. I think just something you mentioned about Georgia's offense is how many passes are there to go around, essentially. You think about Dylan Bell, you think about Colby Young, London Humphreys. I think there's, you know, all those guys can make an impact. Like Noah Thomas may only have like pick a number, like 30 or 40 catches, but it's still a high level impact if he's catching a lot of those into touchdowns. So I think maybe the difference here is Branch automatically has a role as a returner and in the slot, whereas Thomas might be fighting some of those other guys for snaps. Not a bad thing though, to have that much depth at receiver.
Right. Well, and hopefully this isn't a bad thing either. Because of Dakota, I think YouTube is censoring my take on Kansas football. Appreciate the donation, Dakota. I don't know what your take is, but I have a feeling that it's FKU. So we do support that sentiment on this program. All right, number 18. I think old Carl's going to like this one, Steven.
And also somewhere, Cousin Shane has perked up from his day-long nap because we're talking Joey Aguilar, the new quarterback for Tennessee. Speaking of mystery, I think he's kind of a mystery too, coming over late. Obviously, the other quarterback transferred to UCLA. Aguilar was at UCLA and App State, and now he comes to Tennessee. He's got a quick arrival and a quick adjustment to life in the SEC. I think if there's something to like about his fit in the offense, not really afraid to throw downfield or try to fit the ball into tight windows, 42 completions of 30 plus yards over the last 2 years. He also brings some mobility to the table, and you also get Syracuse and East Tennessee State to get him acclimated to this offense to start the year.
Right. So again, he's a little bit lower than most, 18. I mean, would it stun you if that he's a better quarterback this year than Bo Prabula at number 11?
I don't think I'd be stunned by that. I think Heupel's system, yardage, I could see him. I mean, his track record at App State is not, like he said, he's not afraid to push it downfield, which bodes well in Heupel's system. I could see him hitting on a few big plays for sure and ending up maybe statistically better than Prabula as a passer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hope it's not too much of a hot take.
No, not at all. And again, I'm not saying he deserves to be above him. You know what I mean? With all the new pieces on Tennessee's offense, and all the weapons that we've kind of already hit on for Missouri that they've added and return on the offensive line and at tight end and receiver. So, I mean, I think Missouri's probably got a better players around the quarterback. But, again, I don't think – I'm just saying it wouldn't stun me if it was one or the other, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. What did you figure out if he was the guy who threw the pass on the alert tweet the other day?
No, shout out. I just retweeted this right before we hopped on. I think no one does a better job covering Tennessee than Austin Price. He has the photo, Stephen, the unedited photo. Uh-oh. Anybody that missed it. And it was, in fact, tight end Miles Kitzelman that they blurred out. So why they blurred out a tight end, I don't, maybe that's a new story, but it was not a quarterback. So all that for nothing.
That doesn't give me a whole lot of confidence in Tennessee's quarterback situation if we're resorting to tight ends already.
Hey, you know who I do got confidence in, Steven? That's our buddy Too Slick. Too Slick has gifted a membership to Hobby Hangout. Hobby, welcome to
the family.
Yeah, thanks to Too Slick, who's a legend. I think he's gifted 101 time. He must have been on that cornbread that day. But we do appreciate you, Too Slick, for all the contributions and for helping the show. All right, number 19, Steven. Good luck saying this dude's name. I've never learned how to say this.
I'm going to cheat. I'm going to say it's Princely's brother, Prince Will. Okay. because I'm afraid I might mispronounce it here. So I'm going to probably do myself a favor and just say Prince Will at defensive end. I think the key thing here is he is a key piece of the rebuilding effort for Pete Golding. They lose a lot of talent on the defensive line. Some optimism about returning talent stepping up that was younger and the transfers. Throw Deshaun Womack here as well. Prince Will's played a little bit at Nebraska. They've had a pretty veteran front the last couple of years. So I think the key thing is there's a lot of talent to work with. Can Pete Golding get the most out of it this year?
Yeah, I mean, that's a $1 million question down there, isn't it? With all they're replacing. I think people don't understand how good that defense was unless you're an Ole Miss fan. And, man, they are replacing a lot, particularly on the line of scrimmage and some really good defensive backs as well.
I do have confidence in Pete Golding. I think the question is, like, what's the level of drop off there? I don't think it's drastic, but I do think it's going to be hard to run back the group that they had last season.
Mm-hmm. All right, number 20, Steven. Where are you going there?
This might be our first like mystery man on defense. Elo Madozi, the edge rusher linebacker from Georgia. He comes over from Army. A very unique scenario here, a transfer from Army coming into the SEC. So I think you consider that and you consider the fact that he is a post-spring addition. I don't think Kirby Smart's bringing him in to sit on the bench. They see something in him, even if it's 15 to 20 snaps. So what could that be? His numbers last year at Army, 8 tackles for a loss, 6.5 sacks, pretty good at getting to the pass rusher and like all the pass win rates and things like that. So I like the take here for Georgia. It's worth a shot. How does he translate to the SEC? The early returns have been pretty positive, and I think what gives me confidence about this is I just don't think Kirby Smart's going to bring in somebody to take up a scholarship and sit at the end of the bench. They must see something in him, and I think he might be blossoming into a pretty good player after being undervalued in high school and then going to Army for his first couple of years.
Yeah, I didn't know players were allowed to transfer out of these academies, but
I think you can transfer after your first 2 years, I think. Okay. Yeah.
He's done his service. I'm not questioning right. it, but it was interesting to see whenever Georgia lands an Army transfer, that tells me he must be one hell of a player.
Yeah, I don't think Kirby Smart's bringing him in to sit on the bench, and especially a post-spring edition where you've had a full spring. It might keep in mind, too, Georgia doesn't bring in a lot of transfers every year. So the fact that they brought him in, they brought in Josh McCray, the Illinois transfer. They have a role and a need for these type of players.
Well, you know who does bring in a lot of transfers? That's Arkansas. And they got the number 21 transfer, yeah. According to Steven.
Mike, if we did a top like 75 transfers, I think Arkansas would take up quite a few between 20 and 75. That's not a knock on them. They have a lot of really solid transfers coming in this year. But one of those guys is 21. It's Corey Robinson, the left tackle transferring in from Georgia Tech to Arkansas. Why is he important? First of all, he's essentially been a two-year starter at Georgia Tech. No sacks allowed last season, was graded out by a couple different sites as one of the top pass-blocking offensive tackles in college football. But he's going to start at left tackle, which means you can kick Fernando Carmona to left guard. So essentially, you've now solidified two spots. Maybe Carmona was better at guard. You've got your left tackle. I trust Sam Pittman on these things when it comes to the offensive line. So I like the track record at other spots for Robinson, and I like the fit at Arkansas and what it means for their offensive line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and certainly if this hits, they could have a really solid offensive line, which is, I still can't, it's hard to believe that's like a question mark every year seemingly with Arkansas, but maybe, if they have an offensive line, they're going to be very, very dangerous with Taylen Green back there.
Also, Shaq McRoy, the right tackle, may start as a massive human being, like 6'8", 340. You throw in, Kittler from UCF, who may start at center. There's a lot of transfers and a lot of transition there, but I to your point, I trust Pittman to sort of figure out the right mix here.
Mm-hmm. All right, number 22, Steven, another guy I fought to get on this list.
Wendell Moy, the offensive guard transfer from Arizona to Tennessee, also throws Sam Pendleton from Notre Dame coming to Tennessee. Tennessee really solidified its interior by going out and getting these transfers. So I think what you look at when looking at Moy, 27 starts, pretty much day one ready to step into the SEC and play. Allowed one sack the last 2 years at Arizona. Arizona's offensive line struggled last year. That wasn't his fault. They were pretty good 2 years ago. So I think he's a really solid player who will probably benefit from a better offensive scheme at Tennessee. And I think he could take off potentially with all SEC honors this year.
Yeah, I think he's going to be the best interior offensive lineman for Tennessee. He may be the best offensive lineman for Tennessee this fall. So, I'm glad to see Steven wised up, put him on the list. And I'm also glad because Wesley gave us $10. Wesley Williams, appreciate you, buddy. Which SEC coach that is not on the hot seat, Steven, will be on it after the season? So, think about that question. A coach that is not on the hot seat today that could be by the season's end. I don't know if this is cheating, but I would probably say Jeff Lebby. Does he fit that criteria?
I was going to ask who in the SEC is not on the hot seat this year? Like it's got it's a short list, right? Like Kirby, Sarkisian, Shane Beamer.
I think maybe Kalen DeBoer is maybe the best answer to Wesley's question. Maybe not on the hot seat today, but could be by the end of the year. If Alabama doesn't make the playoff, I think they'll probably bring him back, but I think he'd be on like the hottest seat in the country.
I think Lebby and Kalen DeBoer are the right picks here. I think Lebby's almost, if they go winless in the SEC, two winless years in the SEC, even with all those circumstances, I think the pressure starts to build. I think for Kalen DeBoer, I think if they miss the playoff, 2 years in a row where you had a roster that should have made the playoff and didn't would be incredibly problematic. You're not going to it in a 12-team playoff. If Alabama misses the playoff two times with two talented rosters, it would be hard for me to see DeBoer being able to survive another year like that in 2026.
And a lot of people in the comments even are saying Brian Kelly, but I think if they don't make the playoff, I think he's gone anyway.
I think he's on the hot seat, don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, if you invest this much into the portal after everything that happens, fire Brian Kelly in November chance at the stadium, I think he's got to be on the hot seat this year. Maybe not like top of the list, but he would be certainly kind of in that middle tier for me.
Hey, then shout out Gunner, $20. Appreciate you, buddy. Steven, so far on this list, seems like you think Mizzou had the best transfer portal class in the SEC. Do you think it's better than LSU's? Michael Van Buren, Nick Anderson, Barry Brown, Patrick Payton, Mansoor Delaney, Jack Pyburn. Defend yourself, Steven.
That's a good question. Who do I like more? I don't know. I like LSU's. Missouri's got more high, like the higher rated players on our list. LSU's got a little bit more, I don't know, with Delaney, Halsey, Pyburn, Payton. I don't know. I might go LSU a little bit ahead of Missouri.
How about this, though? What if I gave you this information that we clearly don't have right now? Mm. What if Bo is, I don't know where we want to put it, let's say like a top 8 quarterback in this conference next year? I think the answer would be Missouri. I think it hinges on, you know, did they land a quarterback or did they not? What would be your thoughts on that?
I think you might be right on that, Mike. I think if Prabula gives them not just quality level, like we're talking top half of the SEC, Missouri's back in the top 25. If he hits, you're starting running back, receiver, defensive lineman hit. Yeah, I probably would. This is a great question, because I do think both these teams hit their needs this offseason, and I like a lot of what both teams did. To be fair, too, like Pyburn was in consideration for this list. I've heard good things about what he's been, you know, he and Payton, the kind of combo they could bring. So close, I would probably lean LSU right now. Missouri a step behind. But if you told me Prabula was a star, I'd probably go Missouri.
Mm-hmm. All right, number 23 transfer, another one, Steven, that I think is flying under the radar.
Speaking of flying under the radar, so Mike, here's a little like nugget. If you watch Conference USA during the season on Tuesday and Wednesday nights, yes, there are sickos like me who dissect all these games. Seth McGowan was at New Mexico State last year. He's our number 23 transfer here. He was at Oklahoma way back like in 2020. So he's back in the SEC. But I remember watching those games and thinking, you know, Seth McGowan still got it. Like, it's been a few years. He could be playing at a higher level. And you can tell, like, when you're watching these games, like, somebody's got, like, upper, like, power conference talent. So he's back in the SEC. He's stepping into a team with Jamarian Wilcox. They've got some other backs, but it looks like he's going to be the go-to guy. Very, very talented. Also, I think about identity here for Kentucky, because we've talked, like, they've got to get back to the big blue wall. They've got to be able to run it. Here's a guy who could be a kind of sleeper contender for all SEC honors. So I love the pickup, and also probably something to prove for Seth McGowan after getting kicked out of Oklahoma and taking the long path back to the SEC at Kentucky.
Well, I tell you who doesn't have anything to prove, Steven, not to us. That's Jordan Braswell. Jordan just became a member. Jordan, welcome to
the family.
Yay! Appreciate you, Jordan. Hopefully he's not a Kentucky fan. All right, number 24, Steven. Oh, man, I can't believe this guy's this low, but I get it. These are some great transfers here. But surprise, surprise, Mizzou.
Yeah, Mike, Jalen Catalone, when he cashes his Social Security check, will start a few games for Missouri secondary this year. He's been around since 2019. He's been at Arkansas. He's been at Texas. He's been at UNLV. I mean, we kind of joke about his longevity, but he's been a really solid safety at a couple different spots now. 5 interceptions at UNLV last season. I think you throw him in a secondary with Burks, Dalen Carnell, Catalone. That's a really solid back. It kind of into the secondary gives you some versatility to mix and match nickel, safety, however Missouri wants to do it. So experience plus production, high level player for his like 100th year in the SEC.
Shout out Jordan. He says he's a Longhorn fan. Thank you for that, because that means you're going to be locked in all season, because Kentucky fans, I think they're going to be gone within a week. You know what I mean?
They might have a coaching change in November.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. But no, he's a Longhorn, so he's going to be locked in till February when they're playing. All right. So, oh man, I just bashed him. Let's not bash him for one more time here, Steven. Number 25 transfer on your list.
Josh Braun, the offensive lineman from Kentucky, solid 2-year stint at Arkansas. He gave up just 3 sacks in 2 seasons. So he is a preseason all SEC pick for me. I just think this is a key part of getting the big blue wall back together. He's been a solid player in the SEC. There's no question about going from G5 or some other conference. He's played in the SEC. He knows the battles, and he's pretty much a ready-made starter for Kentucky.
Yeah. Third SEC school. I believe he's married. I mean, this is plug and play type. He's probably going to go into the NFL and he'll be one of those, you know, like swing linemen that you add that, you know, someone goes down, let's go get Josh Braun. He can just slide right into the starting unit. That's his future. I'm predicting it already, but I think Kentucky got a nice plug and play and heck, he may be their best offensive lineman. I didn't mean to be disrespectful. Yeah. I'm saying in the NFL, that's what he could be. But yeah, I think that's a really good pickup for Mark Stoops and company. A
couple offensive linemen too, like the Bowling Green, Alex Wolfschlager, I think is how you pronounce it. The Pete kid coming over from New Mexico State. There's like three transfers who could start. It's hard to make that work, but I think that's what Kentucky needs to have a chance to jumpstart this offense this year.
Mm-hmm. And we just saw I think it was Cousin Dakota. Shout out Dakota. He says $100 on my bookie to win for Mizzou to win the SEC. What would that pay? 100-1. So, $100. You'd be talking. What are we talking here? $5,000. So go do it. Go head on over to my bookie. But before we do that, Steven, we got some more transfers to talk about because there's a lot of guys that just missed the cut. Who, and maybe not just one or anything, but. Who's very tops your list for man? I was like, I wanted to put him on here. I just didn't have the room.
How about Boaz Stanley from South Carolina? We didn't have a South Carolina transfer on our list here, but it looks like he's going to claim one of the starting interior spots, potentially at center. He's been a really quality player at Troy. Stepping up into the SEC will be a challenge, but I look at that as like opportunity and a need for South Carolina. They have an opening. Here's this guy who's been really solid at the G5 level. Curious to see how he translates here.
Mm-hmm. What about one guy that I've heard nothing but great things about, Josh Thompson, offensive lineman LSU, transferred in from Northwestern. He had several SEC schools among his finalists, I believe. And, you know, he looks like he's going to potentially start for the Tigers there.
Yeah, he could have easily made our list too, Mike. I mean, he's been pretty solid at Northwestern. I think, you know, last year was his best season, but he's been basically a 2-year starter for Northwestern, but also gets at the need for LSU because they have four new starters in the offensive line, bringing in some guys who are day one ready. Thompson did not give up a sack last year at Northwestern. So pretty good run blocker. Pretty good pass protection experience. I think that's a really important pickup for LSU.
Mm-hmm. How about one guy that I think is in line to start up at Tennessee, Colton Hood, transfer from Colorado. You know, they brought him up for, I don't know specifically if this is the only reason. I you know, he's a good player, but because Gerard McCoy is kind of still working his way back. So Colton Hood, I think he could have a big impact for the Vols this year.
I like that call, Mike. Number one, I think just McCoy's injury, you don't know when he's going to be 100%. It's good to have somebody who's played a lot of snaps. I think, you know, Hood started his career at Auburn, then went to Colorado, and he's bounced back to Tennessee in the SEC. He's got good experience. I thought he played well last year at Colorado, and he faced some good quarterbacks in the conference too. So I think having depth at corner is important, especially when you look at what Tennessee's going to face with McCoy's injury. You get Georgia, Mississippi State, Alabama. You know, you're going to Arkansas. You're going to play some good quarterbacks and passing offenses early in the season. So just having some depth in the secondary is critical.
How about old Isaiah Horton? We've heard a lot, and I think even you have touted what he could be bringing the Miami transfer to Alabama's offense.
Yeah, I think that he just adds to a deep trio. Like, you throw Jeremy Bernard, you throw Ryan Williams, and now you throw Horton, another guy who's got a lot of experience. He caught, what was it, over 50 passes last year at Miami. Also, 6'4". Gives you a little bit of size on the outside. So I like that call just to go get somebody who can maybe score in the red zone to go with the game-breaking ability of Williams and kind of the steady play of Bernard.
Mm-hmm. One guy that we haven't mentioned. I know we mentioned someone off Ole Miss before, but I always forget his first name. Jalen Braxton, I think is his name, from Arkansas, who sat out last year because of, I believe, a car accident. Transfer to Ole Miss, he projects perhaps as a starting defensive back for Pete Golding.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the key thing for Ole Miss with Braxton is 2 years ago, I thought he was kind of a guy kind of maybe on the breakout list. Like he could be an all-conference player if he kept developing. And then, of course, he missed last season. But there's not only the talent angle. There is the need. Ole Miss with a ton of turnover in that secondary. Can you get guys with a defensive line that's also in transition to kind of step up and solidify that secondary? So Braxton's a good kind of bounce back candidate, I think.
Mm-hmm. And man, one quarterback didn't make the list. What was that? Calzada, but he could make the list, Stephen. We've seen talent from him before, beating Alabama. He was, I would say solid at A&M, not spectacular, but heck, it was, a lifetime ago here in college football, 4 years ago now.
Yeah, I think Calzada was close to making this list. I almost put him at 25 over Josh Braun just because of positional importance here. Because he's a quarterback, Kentucky brought him in. He's got to be solid. He's got to be good this year for Kentucky to make a bowl game. I like the experience angle here for Kentucky. You know, he's played, you know, essentially at two SEC schools, and he's played at the FCS level. So the floor seems pretty high here. I don't know if there's all SEC potential, but the floor seems very high for an offense that needs some experience.
Yeah, and we had Dalen Carnell on our show Media Days. Go check it out if you missed it. One guy he mentioned that is standing out to him as a transfer is the linebacker Josiah Trotter, who I believe was a freshman All-American at West Virginia, if I'm not mistaken. So we probably had enough Mizzou on the list, but I know he garnered some consideration from you.
Yeah, he was a tackling machine last year at West Virginia. 92 tackles. Also, a West Virginia defense that changed coordinators early in the year and just frankly wasn't very good. I think he's a guy that's got a lot of talent to tap into in a better situation. So solidifying that second interior to go with like Damon Wilson and some of those other guys, I think this is a good take for Missouri from the portal.
Mm-hmm. And we've already heard the old Diego Pavia talking up Trent Hudson, the transfer from, well, he redshirted last year at Mississippi State, but he was at New Mexico State with them previously. And then a guy that kind of flew completely under my radar, Stephen. I'm sure even as much psycho Tuesday night action as you watch, you probably never watched Trey Richardson over at Lambeuth. I didn't even know that was a school. But apparently New Mexico State tried to get him out of high school. He had to go to JUCO, but he's finally found his way to reconnect with his New Mexico State staff at Vanderbilt. So it's wild all these connections these guys have. But again, is Trent Hudson and Trey Richardson going to like light up the SEC? Probably not. But you know, if they can stretch defenses a little bit, that's exactly what Vanderbilt has been missing in that offense with their, you know, let's call it what it is. It's like a shotgun triple option. The more guys you can stack closer to the box, the more difficult it is to run that offense. But Vanderbilt could really use a couple deep threats, and I think those two guys top the list of contenders.
I like the takes here for Vanderbilt because they needed playmakers. They need more playmakers around Pavia, and with Hudson, his familiarity with the offense, and spent some time in the SEC. 2 years ago at New Mexico State, averaged almost 16 yards per catch. Vanderbilt, as good as they are at playing that style, it still is hard to go 10 plays, 12 plays. Like, you need a little bit more big playability. Well, Hudson gives you that, and also Richardson can give you a little bit more speed and potential on kick returns, too. So just trying to add some more dynamic elements to Vanderbilt's offense.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we could have mentioned any number of Arkansas receivers that because they're going to have plenty of of touches to make up for given what they've lost. You know what?
Yeah, I like Omega Blake. I mean, big play receiver at Charlotte last season. I could see Blake and Taylen Green hooking up for some like 40, 50 yard bombs this year. Raylan Sharp, probably going to play the slot, kind of a lot of quick passes, rack up a lot of receptions. So Blake is the big play threat there. So both of them could have made our top 25 just simply because there is a massive need for receivers at Arkansas, and they fit day one right away.
And then here's one name I wanted to throw out there for the Cousins, and Florida fans are not going to like it. I'm hoping this guy is not one of the top impact transfers in the SEC, but we should at least consider it because of the impact he can have on the football team. And that's Harrison Bailey, Stephen, the transfer quarterback, who, the way I hear it, he's not even the for sure backup. He's not yet secured that position. So he may never see the field for the Florida Gators. And quite frankly, he has been a career backup. He's had many opportunities to earn a starting role, and he's not done it. But he looked like $1 million in the spring game. And why he could be an impact, I mean, it goes without saying why. Because if DJ Lagwe gets injured and misses any time at all, is Harrison Bailey going to lead him to the playoff? No, but maybe he can come in and win you a game or two if Lagwe is limited or misses action. So Harrison Bailey, he should not be on a list like this, top 25 transfers, but it wouldn't stun me by the end of the year if he's not one of the top 25 impact transfers, if that makes sense.
It does. I think what worries me, if I was a Florida fan, is so Bailey has kind of bounced around. He was at UNLV, Tennessee, was kind of supposed to start at UNLV, didn't win the job. He played okay last year in the Sun Bowl, starting for Louisville. I think the problem is he feels a lot like Graham Mertz, where there's a limited upside, but it also feels like he's maybe not as good as Graham Mertz, if that makes sense. You'd be talking about a pretty significant drop-off. This is kind of a deep cut. I would feel better about Florida's backup if they kept Deshaun Purdy around. He was back, like he had like a cup of coffee with Florida back like in January. I would have felt better about their quarterback situation if he stayed around and not Harrison Bailey being the backup.
Interesting. Yeah, and didn't he transfer in and then he transferred somewhere else? Was that the story?
Yes, he could actually start at Wake Forest this year.
Okay.
You know who was throwing all those bombs to Omega Blake last year? Shaw Purdy.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, that is a deep cut.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Anybody else that you want to mention that didn't quite make the cut, but you gave heavy consideration to?
Yeah, how about Darrell Robinson at Auburn? You know, he's kind of bounced around. He's been at UConn, had a pretty good year at UConn last season. Some rumblings out of Auburn. He's looked really good this year. Of course, there's some guys banged up. Damari Alston, he could play a role at running back. Mike, also, I would throw in some of the guys at Texas A&M, like Mario Craver, Julian Humphrey. Does Humphrey emerge as kind of a starter at corner or somewhere in the secondary? Also wanted to mention Marvin Jones at Oklahoma, a guy who has a significant upside, but also much like Patrick Payton last year at Florida State, he struggled. So I think the question is, can Oklahoma's defensive staff figure out where exactly he needs to fit? And I trust Brent Venables to do that. So it would not surprise me to see his talent equal a lot better production at Oklahoma. And he kind of lives up to that 5-star or 4-star hype coming out of high school.
Okay, well, hey, the last thing I got for you, Stephen, you said you'd have an all-impact team for us. Can you share exactly your mindset or into what exactly is an all-impact team before you go into it?
Yeah, Mike, I think the impact team is kind of like who is going to make the biggest, almost like, you know, biggest production impact on the field this year. Like we just ran through all of like, you know, 50 something transfers in the SEC. We could have done more. There are some defensive linemen that are going to play a lot, but is it going to be enough production to be on there? So this is kind of like an all conference transfer team in the SEC, basically. Like who's going to make the biggest impact this year?
Okay. Gotcha. So who made your list then?
We'll start at quarterback. It's John Mateer. Obviously, I think a pretty easy call at running back, Ahmad Hardy and Jaden Ott, Seth McGowan. We'll go Kevin Concepcion at all purpose, receiver, Eric Singleton, Kevin Coleman. And I chose Nick Anderson because I didn't want to cheat. I just picked one. At tight end, we'll go with my guy, Jack Andres from Texas. Offensive line, Wendell Moy, J- Josh Braun, Corey Robinson, Xavier Chaplin, Braylon Moore, Boaz Stanley. Anything stand out to you there, Mike?
Well, what stands out to me, Stephen, is as you're putting this team together, I'm thinking, man, this sounds like a playoff contender. If we could put the transfer team on just one squad, that sounds like that'd be one hell of a lineup.
That sounds like the answer to the question that we've had this offseason. Who is the SEC's like fifth best team, right? It's a transfer squad.
So who's your defense there?
We'll go with Damon Wilson, Patrick Payton, Prince Will, Marad Watson along the defensive line. Throw in, David Gusta from Washington State going to Kentucky, I think is a name to watch, along with Myquis Humphrey Grace. We talk about offensive line for Kentucky. They got to have some of those defensive linemen hit. So I had Gusta on the impact team. At linebacker, Elo Madozi from Georgia, Josiah Trotter from Missouri, Caleb Wheatlin from Maryland transferring into Auburn. Probably going to play a lot of snaps there. In the secondary, we'll go with Jalen Braxton, Mansoor Delaney, Brandon Cisse from South Carolina. He's kind of another under-the-radar pickup for South Carolina. Jalen Catalone and Julian Humphrey from Texas A&M.
Mm. I like the offense team better than the defense. But, again, some major impact. I think we got spoiled a year ago with Ole Miss adding all these All-American defensive linemen. Those guys were not in the portal. You know why? Because everybody values defensive linemen and were giving them anything they wanted. Unless Texas wanted you, and then Texas got you.
Walter Nolans don't go into the portal very often to transfer, right? Like, he's a pretty special player, and those guys don't go into the portal every year, unfortunately, for the rest of college football.
Right. All it took was Jimbo to get fired, and he was out the door. You know what?
Right. Yeah. Great for Ole Miss. Nearly made it to the playoff. Unfortunately for the rest of college football, probably set the unrealistic expectation that these All-American defensive linemen are going to be in there every year, and they're just not.
All right, Steven. So, hey, we're just short of 90 minutes on this episode. Anything else before we hop off the line?
I got a transfer kicker and a punter for you.
Please.
I mean, Lucas Carnero going to Ole Miss, I think is a easy pick for maybe all SEC honors this year. And Jack Bowmeister from Texas will be our all impact punter.
Oh, you said nothing but nice things about Texas, but you didn't throw Mason Shipley on there, all kicker. You just now they're gonna have fits that they don't have a kicker.
Yeah, Carnero's pretty good too. I guess Shipley could be on there too. It's close. I mean, I gave a punter that they may not use because Arch is going to score every time this year. So,
hey, they're asking for a rehash of the top 16. So I made a little graphic here. It's just got the top 15 here. Well, I'll be posting this on the social media here in just a second. But so there's your 15. 16 is Stephen cheated. Nick Anderson, Barry and Brown, LSU. 17, he cheated again. Zachariah Branch, Noah Thomas, Georgia. 18, Joey Aguilar, Tennessee. 19, Prince Will at Ole Miss. 20, Elo Madozi, Georgia linebacker. 21, Corey Robinson, Arkansas offensive lineman. 22, Wendell Moe, Tennessee offensive lineman. 23, Seth McGowan, Kentucky running back. 24, Jalen Catalon, defensive back, Missouri. At 25, Josh Braun, Kentucky offensive lineman. Thank you, Stephen, for all the work you did getting this list together, all transfer squad here. Can't wait for a lot of these guys to see them in action in a real conference for the first. Well, some of them are SEC transfers, but the guys coming into the league, I'll respect you once I see you got that SEC patch on your shoulder.
Isn't that like one of the big questions of like the season also has made predicting these things a lot harder because transfers. Yeah. I mean, I was going back and I looked, I forget which year it was, and there was like 100 transfers overall in college football that year. Yes, my notes go back that far. So it was like a total nerd moment there. But then I was like, man, there's like 100 transfers in 2 hours, like during the portal season. So it's added an element of uncertainty. Like teams can fill needs, but also think you and I have talked a lot about don't overrate these guys. We need to see them in the conference, but they're also like a source of optimism because they fill a need, a question mark, or they're a high profile quarterback addition.
Right. Yeah. That's what's, you know, it's going to make it so fascinating to see, you know, just it, the unpredictability, I think, is crazier than ever. We went over the top 25 earlier, 9 SEC teams in the top 25, 11 if you count the top 27. So the two that just missed the cut, and many, many more. I'll throw that up real quick one more time. But just kind of the point being, man, I think it's going to be a war every time you face someone not named Kentucky or Mississippi State. And hell, for all I know, we could be dead wrong about those, because Mississippi State, you know, you would seemingly can't be any worse. And Kentucky, backs against the wall, you know, being disrespected, that's kind of when they play their best football. So, man, this is going to be a wild, wild season in the SEC. Can't wait for it. Also can't wait, Stephen. We only got a couple hours left. SEC documentary on Netflix. Go check that out. That I'll be on. Hopefully they use some of Cousin Shane in it too. I don't know, but you know, that's coming out Tuesday. So, man, that's just going to get us even more jacked up for college football.
Oh man, a documentary in the SEC from last season. Like I said, there's fall practice going on. We've got all this stuff. I mean, the kickoff's not that far away. We've made it, friends. We're here. We should note, Mike, real quick. Mississippi State had a lot of transfers that could have made like a top 50 list. I think the question is like which one like steps up this year. That's been one of the harder reads, is to figure out where all these guys exactly fit in there.
Right, and man, unfortunately for them, a lot of the guys that they lost featured on this list as well. You know what?
Yeah. Kevin Coleman, a big loss to Missouri. Some good, some bad there. Like, they brought in a heavy quantity class. Maybe there's not the standout, but there could be a lot of guys like in that second to third tier of transfers that could help this year.
Yep. All right. So, hey, that's going to do it for this episode of the show. We'll be back tomorrow night with Cousin Shane, as long as he's fixed his internet. No promises there. But that's going to do it. We'll catch you. As always, we appreciate each and every one of you. Really, really appreciate all the donations. And actually, I think I missed one. I totally forgot. Real quick, Jesse Thompson, appreciate you, buddy. I didn't want to not get you. $2. More pressure this year, Stephen. Healthy Lagway or Mateer, more pressure. I'd say Lagway. But hell, I mean, you can easily go Mateer, too.
I would go Mateer. Because
I know you hate Oklahoma.
I think that you could make a case with, you know, the turnover, like bringing in the offensive coordinator, everything that went wrong. If like Lagway is a pretty special player, like I think whatever happens this year, if there's a new coach, he's going to be A1 superstar. Like Mateer was so good at Washington State. What happens if it doesn't translate at all to Oklahoma, and we're like 3 games in, like, oh my gosh, like they just got beat by Michigan, this team is like a bust. Like, I don't know, like it just feels like both teams you can make a pretty compelling case here for, but I think I'd go Mateer for Oklahoma. I think he's one of the biggest X factors of the season.
Yeah, well, you had him number one in your list for a reason. Now it sounds like you're doubting his ability. That's a perfect way to end this one. We don't know what the world we're talking about. Steven does, but I don't. We'll catch you tomorrow on the next one. Appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.